Welcome back to Coast, Douglas Caddy with us. We're going to take your calls as we talk about his autobiography, Being There. And the next hour, by the way, Michael Horn joins us talking about the prophecies of Billy Meier. And welcome back to Coast, Douglas Caddy with us. Douglas, it's amazing how all these stories kind of intertwine with each other, don't they?
They do, and to a great extent. Of course, Howard Hunt, being involved in both the Kennedy assassination and Watergate, it illustrates that. But I might say you probably remember Watergate and the controversy that occurred at the time. But at no time during all the public hearings before the Irvin Committee and the special prosecutor did anybody ever say that the same people that were the Watergate burglars were the same people that killed Kennedy.
No, they did not. That never came up. How
come? Isn't that amazing? And it was the most investigated thing at the time. It was unbelievable, and it never came up. They kept that secret. The CIA, of course, knew what had occurred, but they kept that secret all during that period. It would have been very explosive had it come out.
Do you think the UFO issue was one of the main reasons why they did him in?
I absolutely do. I had a conversation with Howard Hunt just before he went to prison. He went to prison in 1975.
Okay.
Three years after the Watergate break-in, after the trials, because even though he pleaded guilty, they needed his testimony before the Senate, by the special prosecutor, before the Senate committee, and so forth. And so he was going to go away for about 3.5 years, and he called me and said, we had not had any contact since Watergate broke. There were only three periods. I saw Howard Hunt came to my apartment on June 17th to retain me, and then when his wife was killed, I attended the funeral. He walked across the parking lot and embraced me, and the tears were rolling down his eyes. I could see he was just tormented.
Yeah.
But we could not talk because anything that he might say to me or I might say to him might end up in before the grand jury because of what they had done to me. And so he contacted me in 1975 and said, let's have dinner. We did have dinner at the Yenching Palace. And among the things we discussed, he was very, he didn't want to get into Watergate too deeply as to what really had occurred, but some things he did tell me. And then among them being that one reason they went into Watergate were to get they believed there were reports of Cuban government reports on the Kennedy assassination that could link Nixon indirectly to the Kennedy assassination because he had set in motion an attempt to kill Castro. And on the sidewalk outside, I knew I wouldn't see Howard again for a long time. He was off to prison. So I said to him, well, why was Kennedy actually killed? He said, Kennedy was killed because he was going to give our most vital secret to the Soviet Union, to the Soviets. And I said, our most vital secret, what could that be?
Yeah,
he said, the alien presence. And he was in a position to know. Don't forget, he ghost wrote.
Did that blow you away when he said that?
It did, but I didn't have the background at that time. To be honest, I didn't have the background to understand UFOs and alien presence. I knew about UFOs vaguely, but it wasn't really until I started listening to your program and I became a member of the Education Forum out of London. They started a topic about me that I started putting all these pieces together. Howard Hunt, you know, he ghost wrote Alan Dulles's book, The Craft of Intelligence. He was a key ally and friend of both Dulles brothers. He worshipped them, and he worshipped them. He thought they were the greatest. And so he was in a position, of course, Alan Dulles was a key part of Majestic 12, a key leader in Majestic 12. And so he was in a position to have knowledge of why Kennedy was killed.
Did he elaborate about the alien presence?
No, he did not. At that point, he just looked me in the eyes, shook my hand, turned and walked away. And I never saw him again. We did correspond, and we did talk on the phone in later years, but that was the last I saw Howard Hunt, and I never talked to him about it again.
Let's take some calls here for you as they line up. Let's go to George in Concord, Massachusetts, first-time caller. Hey, George, go ahead.
Hi. My father was a member of the Executive Protective Service, and they had a training division. And I read E. Howard Hunt's book, and he talks with surprise about how good the Watergate hotel detectives were and how surprised they were that they actually had a stakeout. And so I was wondering whether it, how widely was it known that the Watergate hotel detectives had been actually assisted by White House personnel in being trained to be good detectives and not just schlumpy hotel detectives. I was wondering how widely that was known, or if it's known at all.
Did anybody know that, Douglas?
I'm unfamiliar with the hotel detectives. I am familiar with the detectives that arrested the burglars. That was Carl Schaffler. And Carl Schaffler, by the way, he was a military intelligence agent that had been assigned to the Metropolitan Police, and he knew 2 weeks in advance of the plan to break into the Democratic National Committee. He was parked just a block away from Watergate, waiting for the call to come in that the break-in was underway, and he went in and arrested them. He had arranged, he had been trained at NSA's Bent Hill Farm Station in Virginia, where they train people on wiretapping and also all those crafts. Both he and Bob Woodward went through the school together there. And he knew exactly how to do things. And one of the things he did, he set it up through a triangleization, you might say, whereby the wiretapper, who was Alfred Baldwin, the wiretapper for the burglars, got heard a conversation whereby an envelope was left on the desk there. It was going to be picked up at noon on Saturday, and so the burglars moved the date of their break-in to get the envelope, which they considered very important. And the reason it was important on Saturday was Carl Schaffler's birthday. He wanted the arrest to take place on his birthday. It was a present to himself, and that's how it went down. And it was all. I worked with James Rothstein, a retired New York City detective, who's really an ace in being a detective. And he said he had heard rumors, substantial rumors ahead of time. He knew Carl Schaffler. There was widespread talk about a break-in taking place at the Democratic National Committee. And so apparently the only people that did not know it were Howard Hunt and the burglars. And they went ahead with it and got caught.
And the guy who really stumbled into everything was the security guard, Frank Wills, out at the Watergate. He saw the locks had been tampered with and called the police.
Well, I've been told by someone who talked with him and knew him, he's passed away since then.
Yeah, but he died early.
He had been contacted by Carl Schaffler. He was looking for that. He knew that was going to go down. He was looking for something, and he did find the doors being taped. But he had advanced knowledge, as did Carl Schaffler.
Was E. Howard Hunt in Dallas at the time of the assassination?
Yes.
Was he one of those hobos that they talked about?
That I don't know. I really don't know.
Let's go to...
I've studied the pictures, and one... is somewhat similar, but it doesn't really look like him. But I know St. John has said he thought it was his father. I think St. John has said that on your program, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's go to Christian in San Pedro, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Christian. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, George. It's good talking to you again. And
thank
I just want
sir.
To say, Mr. Caddy, it's an honor to speak with you. I'm surprised that, because I've been reading about the Kennedy assassination for quite a while, and I have always figured that the assassination was basically, understanding the Kennedy assassination, it was more down to earth. That if you want to understand why Kennedy was killed, you have to understand what happened at the Bay of Pigs and then the Cuban Missile Crisis and JFK standing down. And then, you know, JFK's really, the straw that broke the camel's back was when he signed the National Security Action Memorandum 263. Which was, you know, to pull our advisors out, essentially pulling the plug out of the Vietnam War. The Vietnam conflict, as Fletcher Prouty has said, we were in Vietnam from 1945, but it was the CIA's baby. So I've always figured that that's really what got Kennedy killed, and I've always thought, well, Kennedy was killed because he was going to, you know, expose the alien secret. I didn't pay too much to some surprise that you really feel that he was killed because he was going to spill the beans on that. But my question I wanted to ask you is, what do you think Richard Nixon, in a drunken rant, was screaming about in that famous 18-minute gap of the Nixon tapes? And it's thank you, and I'll have to get your book and read it. And it was a pleasure speaking with you, and I'll take my answer on the air.
Sure.
Thank you.
Great, great book. And by the way, great documents in that book as well. But I don't know. What was Nixon ranting and raving about? Do we know?
No, we don't know. But we do know because you carried this on your program about March 1 when Linda Moulton Howe had a interview with Robert Merritt about his three meetings with Nixon.
Right,
in 1972. And at that point, just to recap what those three meetings were about, Robert Merritt was a confidential informant. He was a protege of Carl Schaffler. He was the sole employee of the Houston Plan. Which
yep, and Schaffler was a police detective.
Yeah, but he was military intelligence, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Nixon knew of Robert Merritt because he was a sole employee of the Houston Plan, which was Nixon's plan to do much better than the FBI and the CIA and so forth. And so he summoned Robert Merritt, and at the first meeting they just talked about what Merritt had done for the Houston Plan. That took place a few days before J. Edgar Hoover was killed. The next meeting they had was a few days before the Watergate break-in, at which point Merritt told Nixon that of the plan that he knew, that Carl Schaffler already knew of the plan to break into the the Burglars' plan to break into Watergate, and Nixon wrote it off, saying, "Well, I'm just going to sit back and see what takes place." He said, "I don't have any aura in this." And so he sort of wrote it off. But at the third meeting, which took place 2 weeks after the Watergate break-in, when Robert Merritt met with Nixon in the sub-basement in the White House, Nixon was in tears. He was crying. He says, "They finally got me. It's all over. I know I'm finished." Though he continued to fight, obviously, very hard to hold on to that position. But at that point, he read to Merritt a letter that he was asked. He asked Merritt to deliver it to Henry Kissinger, which was about the alien presence and the fact that the president Nixon for years had been working on with an individual from another planet on a number of scientific endeavors.
Was that Valiant Thor?
Was that, beg your pardon?
Was his name Valiant Thor?
That is not in the document that he gave. He read the document he was going to Kissinger that he asked Merritt to deliver. That name was not in there. But he taped this document, this letter, to Merritt's chest and had the shirt pulled down. This was at 3 a.m. in the morning, so that the Secret Service agent that drove Merritt back to his home would not know about it. And Merritt ultimately delivered that to Kissinger. Actually by mail is how he had to do it ultimately. Now, there was also a message that Nixon left inside the White House. He left it in the library to be discovered at a certain point in time. And actually, my information, which comes from Merritt, which comes from an intelligence agent, is that the message was found a month ago. And President Trump, according to what we've been told, came down and grabbed the book that had the message in it, and the book was then wrestled from his hands by the CIA agents, who then left with the book containing the message.
Huh. You provided some information to Special Counsel Robert Mueller, haven't you?
I have, yes.
What did, can you say what he was looking for?
Well, let me just finish one other thing before I just want to answer that. Robert Merritt, there is a grand jury investigation into this whole thing we're talking about right now. The judge has put a gag order on it. I don't know the details of it other than there is a grand jury investigation, and that Robert Merritt apparently has been a witness before the grand jury. I don't know any of the details, but going back to the question you just asked, yes, I did get information to Comey. But then Comey was fired, and so I gave it to Mueller. And essentially, it concerns. I was contacted by Harley Schlanger of the LaRouche Organization, whom I've known for many years. Harley Schlanger is actually a very brilliant guy. Lyndon LaRouche is. I heard him speak one time in person, and he's very hard to. He's a very brittle person, put it in his philosophy and so forth. But he wanted me to put him. Harley wanted me to put him in touch with Roger Stone, which I did. And they developed a relationship. And under the law, there is a section under the law called misprison of a felony, whereby if you have the knowledge that a felony may have been committed, you are obligated to report this or face a penalty of misdemeanor conviction. And so I was obligated as an attorney to file a report with Mueller on this. Hmm. And I haven't heard back, but I assume it is being investigated. The relationship between now the LaRouche organization had representatives at that dinner in December of 2015, the famous dinner that Putin had in Moscow there for the celebration of the anniversary of Russia Today, and that's where General Flynn was sitting next to him, and the LaRouche people had a delegation there, and so. The question arose whether the delegation was given an assignment to cultivate Roger Stone because Roger was so close to Trump.
Oh yeah, he was very close to him. He's denied some things, but now he's admitting he did have a meeting and with some Russian representatives and things like that.
Right, but I was in no position to investigate this, so I said I do have the legal obligation to call it to your attention, and it's up to you to handle it from. And we'll find out if it turns out that Roger Stone is indicted. It may turn out that among the witnesses were the LaRouche people. I don't know.
And let me ask you this, and then we'll take more calls, Douglas. Is there anything wrong with a candidate now, meeting with foreign leaders, talking to them about the possibility of that person being elected president in order to have a relationship when that person's elected?
Well, we really have to focus on what happened here with Russia and with Putin and with Trump. And I think we really have to wait to what Mueller's indictments and report show.
I mean, at this point, I don't know what was done wrong. That's what legally I don't understand that yet. And they've never really told us what.
No, they have not. And the reason for that is that Mueller has proceeded very, very carefully. He has nothing has come out of his office. There has not been a leak. We've only heard Trump's side of the case. We haven't heard Mueller's side. But, Senator Warner, Mark Warner, who's a ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, was quoted as saying the other day, the next 3 months are going to be full of dynamite. Mueller's going to do a number of things, and he said it'll be very explosive. So I think we're just on the edge right now, probably after the 4th of July, a lot of things will happen.
All right. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment, Douglas, and take final phone calls with you. Douglas Caddy, our special guest, lawyer, attorney, his autobiography, Being There, Eyewitness to History. It's a great read. We'll tell you where you can get the book when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, as I mentioned, Michael Horn joins us. He is the U.S. representative for Billy Meyer of Switzerland, who has had those incredible UFO contacts. But he's also going to be talking about Billy's prophecies and what could come true. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Douglas Caddy, our guest. Douglas, where do we get your book, Being There?
It's best to get it through Amazon. It's available now. And actually, Chris Milligan and Trine Day have a number of outstanding books. And so while you're taking a look at mine, take a look at all the books offered by Trine Day. There's some remarkable books.
They've got some great ones in the back of your book. They've got a few of them listed. Very poignant stuff. Very poignant. Let's go to Roy in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Roy, get us started. Go ahead.
Thank you so much, George.
Sure thing.
Mr. Caddy, you are my hero. I cannot wait to read your book, your new book, Being Here. Great title. Not Being There. Being Here. I'm on the education forum. Don't post much, but I always read it. And you're such a great contributor because you bring information I don't see anywhere else to it. Okay, now I want to talk about this alien presence thing. You've mentioned it a couple times, the first caller did. Last thing Howard Hunt said to you before prison is the motivation behind the murder of President Kennedy. St. John Hunt's book, he asked his father the same question a number of times, and E. Howard Hunt said it was pure, uncut revenge, diabolical revenge, he called it once. By the way, in St. John Hunt's book, Dorothy, you're in the index as much as President Kennedy is, though it's a skeletal index. Huh. Well, I think these answers are not, they don't exclude each other. I think they're both somewhat, they're both very true. The anti-Castro Cubans, when they, in the early 60s, they were, I've never heard of a more vindictive people than them. It's alien, I believe. It's alien. Mother Earth, Mother Nature could be an organism. And maybe, I think it's pretty definite. And the pyramids, the Great Pyramids, the Sphinx are much older than we thought. It had to have some engineering help, at least. By the way, when you mentioned this on the education forum about your conversation with E. Howard Hunt, it was, unless you brought Majestic 12 into it, it was kind of met with bewilderment. But I'd like to hear just your opinion on, I guess you've probably looked into it. I think any alien presence we've had and have, I think they pretty much leave us alone if they think we're a lost cause, if they think we're bad. I think there's something enslaving of a superior race. It is not the enslaving type, though. I think that might have happened sometime. And
he didn't elaborate, Douglas, did he?
No, Howard Hunt did not. But let me just point out one thing. The decisions were made somewhere at the top. I maintain they were made, by, the decision to kill Kennedy was made by Majestic 12, but they still had to have the troops to do it. And this caller is correct in the sense that the Cuban Americans hated Kennedy for what had happened at the Bay of Pigs.
Well, they blamed Kennedy. Really wasn't Kennedy's fault, was it?
No, I don't think it was either. I think what Kennedy was faced with was the possibility of a war with the Soviet Union had it gone forward. He had only been president for 6 months when this was all planned under Eisenhower. You know,
primarily Richard Nixon, the vice president, was handling it for Eisenhower. It was his plan, and I guess Kennedy was told about it by some people who leaked it, and he used it in one of the debates, and Nixon unfortunately couldn't react to it because it was supposed to be secret.
Right. Well, I mentioned prior in the program Detective James Rothstein of New York City, a retired detective, but he actually arrested Frank Sturgis when Frank Sturgis came to New York City in 1976 to kill Marita Lorenz, who was going to testify before that select committee on the assassination about the Kennedy assassination. And Frank Sturgis, at that time, they bombed it because Rothstein had been on the Essex, one of those ships right there offshore during the Bay of Pigs invasion. And he was of the strong opinion, as was Sturgis, that Kennedy made a horrible mistake. And they bonded together. But at that point, Sturgis said that he would never forgive Kennedy for Kennedy making that decision and causing the death of so many people.
Yeah.
And there was as your caller pointed out, this somewhat irrational hatred towards Kennedy, and so they did have to have troops on the ground to carry it out, which they did. There were three teams in Dallas. The first team was one that carried out the assassination. There was another team at the Mercantile Mart, where Kennedy was going to give his luncheon speech, and there was another one at the airport where he departed. And the third one according to Detective Rothstein, was headed by Big Al Caron, who's actually a New York City detective, too.
What do you think Oswald's role was? He claims he was a patsy, but he must have known something.
He knew something, but I think he was a patsy. I really do. And I think it was all very carefully planned. And I think the planner was probably Angleton. I mean, very, very carefully planned.
And Ruby knew him, did he not?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Ruby was told to go take him out.
Oh, I don't question that. I'm sure that's true. But don't forget, Ruby. At one point later on, and you can see this on the internet, on the YouTube, whereby he says, if you want to know who killed Kennedy, you got to read J. Evetts Haley's book, Texas Looks at Lyndon. He said he implied it was Lyndon Johnson at the top that killed Kennedy.
Let's go to Peter in Florida. Welcome to the program. Hi, Peter. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Douglas, what do you know about B.B. Rebozo?
That was Nixon's friend. How about you, Douglas?
That's about all I know about him. That's about all I know. My book is really based on the information that happened to me. And so I wouldn't know anything about B.B. Rebozo.
He was down in your neck of the woods, Peter, wasn't he?
He sure was. Key Biscayne, Florida.
Yep. Absolutely. He was he was a wealthy friend of Richard Nixon and dabbling in all kinds of things. Peter, thanks for that. Let's go to Manchester, Connecticut. Joe's with us. Joseph, go ahead, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Caddy, Mr. Norrie.
Hi, Joe.
I have two important questions I'd like to ask, and then I'll hang up and you can give the answer over the radio.
Okay.
The first one is, the only promise that President Trump hasn't kept is he promised during his campaign that the date of the Kennedy assassination that, you know, was supposed to be released last year. And then there was only some dribs and drabs released. The bulk of it is being held out for an indefinite future date. What would compel President Trump, in your opinion, not to release that information like he promised? That's the only promise that I know of he hasn't kept to the date. And then the second thing, even more important than that, I'm very fearful with all this information about the Kennedy assassination and all the dynamics behind it. There must be dynamics in play right now. I fear for President Trump's safety going forward. And I don't know if anything happened to President Trump like President Kennedy, there's 60 million plus people in this country, we would be in a civil war, because people right now are just being quiet. And
all right. Well, let's talk about the first. The second, I make it a point that we do not talk about those issues on the radio, Douglas. But in terms of the JFK records, not releasing them, why not?
Yeah, Trump apparently made that decision not to release all of them, and that was a mistake. But I think that possibly that he is aware of the alien presence, and especially because of the message that was left in the library there by Nixon, which he is aware of. But let me point one other thing. Recently, he announced a special space force that would be created as part of the Defense Department, a military space force. And I read into that he is aware of the whole issue of the alien presence and the importance to our country, to the world. And this is motivating some of his decisions here, including maybe not releasing everything that are in the records that might open this up one way or another.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Douglas. A couple of questions on your book. One was, you're kind of saying you think Hoover was actually knocked off, which would be a big deal because he was still the FBI director. And also with these people you interviewed for the book, did anybody mention either the use of drugs by these characters or dabbling in the diabolical or dark arts? And with Nixon himself, how much of a power player was he? Because as I read history, it seemed like he was running the country at times as the vice president due to illnesses that Eisenhower did have.
Yes, Nixon did do that when Eisenhower was ill. But Nixon had a great knowledge. Eisenhower had the most knowledge of the alien presence, but Nixon had about 85% of that. And this motivated much of his actions when he was president. And one thing he told Robert Merritt was that he wanted to be, he wanted a third term to be president. He wanted a third term because at that point he would release the information about the alien presence and make the transition that sooner or later will have to be made one way or another, I guess. And so Nixon was a very, I think Nixon was, we will never really understand what Nixon had in mind and what he intended to do because it was short-circuited by Watergate, but I think he had very important plans for the world and for our country in dealing with the alien presence.
When they talk about the alien presence, though, Douglas, what are we talking about? How elaborate is this?
Well, you've had guests on your program talking about how many entities, different type of entities, yep, may be visiting Earth.
Dozens.
Get up to 60 or 70 of them. Others just talk about three. But I don't think you can understand what is happening in the world today without considering the alien presence. And Catherine Austin Fitz has appeared on your program, and
yes,
she talked about the disappearance of like $40 trillion that has disappeared over a period of decades that has gone into the hands of Majestic 12 to deal with the alien presence one way or another. But we have no inkling of what really is going on. It may be that we actually have, as the scientists or the person in charge of the Skunk Works out there said at the time, we can take E.T. home. We have the ability to take E.T. home now. It may be that we have actually traveled to other planets. We really don't know. I think we only know about 5% of what's going on.
All right, let's go to Edward in San Antonio, Texas. Get a call in here. Edward, go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. I appreciate the time and pleasure speaking with you. I had a question for Mr. Caddy. Are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Morris Jaffe in relation to LBJ?
Yeah, Morris Jaffe was a very powerful influence. To get things done, you would go to Morris Jaffe, and he was also a money man. He was a very powerful person. I've talked in this program about how Texas was run when Lyndon Johnson was senator and president, but Morris Jaffe was a key person to carry out Johnson's plans.
Well, and I'm in the oil and gas business, and particularly when I was in Duval County, I heard a lot about Box 29, the deal, the standoff with the recount with LBJ.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that whole deal, but that was, you know, more so contributed to George Parr, who was another big mover down in that area.
Roger Stone talks about this in his excellent book. I would say, if you haven't gotten hold of Roger Stone's book on JFK, he talks about this.
That election with LBJ, when he got elected as a senator, was pretty darn close, wasn't it?
It was, and it was that box that was stuffed with ballots for LBJ that carried the day against Coach Stevenson.
So, Douglas, what do you do next? What's on your agenda?
Well, I'm 80 years old.
Good for you.
What I'm going to do, what I plan to do, actually, is there are many facets to my book. So we've covered a great deal here, but there are other things in the book that we have not covered. And what I want to do is to go on the road and put on a solo performance. And to anybody who's interested in listening, maybe college students and so forth, what I know based on what has happened to me and my personal knowledge.
Any regrets with what you've done in your career?
No, I really don't have any regrets at all. Before we sign off, I would like to mention one thing, if
yeah,
possible. It's somewhat related to what we're talking about. There are people out there who have knowledge of crimes and criminal things that are going on, and I want to give them an idea of how to get the word out about this. And this is how I used it twice. I wrote the chief judge, the federal chief judge, saying, "You, the grand jury is under your jurisdiction, and I would like to appear before the grand jury, and this is what I would like to say." And I lay out my criminal knowledge.
So people need to be able to get to know that. Douglas, thank you for being on the program. Up next, Michael Horn and the prophecies of Billy Meier.